things like press releases have relevance again, as long as you frame the press releases in the form of answers to an extent, make it more palatable.
But I heard that PR doesn't help drive revenue, Perry. No. That's what I heard.
So. No, you feel it in your gut. So
that was sarcasm for anybody who didn't pick up on it. Anyway, carry on.
Folks, that's a joke.
Welcome to Under Embargo, the podcast that says the quiet part out loud about PR, communications, and the chaos in between. Hosted by two of LinkedIn's most connected comms pros, Becca Chambers, a no BS corporate comms exec with raging ADHD, and Parry Hedrick, founder of tech PR firm Crackle PR. This show brings it all. Real talk, sharp insights, and the kind of industry truths they don't put in press releases. No fluff, no filters, no f***s given. This is Under Embargo. Let's get into it.
All right. Welcome to the Under Embargo podcast. I am your host, Becca Chambers, CMO of Scale Venture Partners, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Parry Hedrick, founder of Crackle PR. This is our first episode back after a couple months off for the summer of fun and summer of work and all of the things, but we're more energized than ever to be back, and I'm excited for today's guest, Chris G, who is talking about one of the things that I am most excited to talk about, which is AI strategy for PR and communications people, which is a very specific use of AI, which is rad, but it's probably the most relevant topic to most of the people who are listening to this podcast right now, because we are all trying to figure out how to use AI to do our jobs better. Before Chris started his AI consultancy, he was also head of digital for corporate affairs at Edelman and managing director of digital strategy for FGS Global, head of digital strategy at Burson, among other digital communication leadership roles over the past 20 plus years. So I am super excited to welcome Chris to the show. Welcome.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Boy, listing off all those PR agencies I've worked for makes me feel like I should get a punch card. But you know, really excited to be here and really kind of an interesting transition for me. My career has been all about transformation. And so we're in a very significant period of transformation as we speak. And that's kind of the world where I sit in. I started Chris G Consulting 2 years ago. Really kind of to address the AI adoption curve and gap as it relates to public relations and communications professionals, both PR firms and also internal corporate communications folks and everything. And you're right. I mean, this is really an interesting time. This is a big topic in our industry, and I'm excited to have it with you guys.
It's awesome. And I actually think that's like the perfect segue to my first question for you, which is, how did you decide to make it specifically for communications, PR, corp comms folks?
That's a great question. You know, I think it really started, I had the idea before I left Edelman in the early part of 2023, right? When we were all just coming out of the holidays and ChatGPT and Midjourney and other generative AI tools really captured our imagination. And I just was trying to absorb as much as I could, to learn as much as I could about AI at the time, because I knew most of our clients were really going to want to know about it. And I also wanted to see what the use cases were for us. And I just really found that there was a lot out there, but there was very little that was relevant. I was looking for use cases that were specific to my job, that would help me do my job. I was looking for tools that would be specific to comms and PR. And what I found was a lot of stuff that was really hot up here and very little that was more specific to what we do. So when I decided to start my consultancy, that's the first place I decided to focus. I mean, I know the space. I knew what I would need if I were still in one of my previous roles. I knew what my clients would need and what they were clamoring for as I was talking to them and doing workshops about AI and helping them learn about it. So that became my focus. And I decided to boil the ocean, start with the community that I knew, and it just really kind of grew from there.
Amazing.
Can we get a little bit like specific about some of the kinds of things from a comms perspective you were looking for AI to help you with, and others in turn would be looking to apply to their lives? Asking for a PR agency, myself.
Yeah, I you're trying to figure out how can we use AI to do timesheets, right?
We don't do timesheets. Thank the Lord.
Oh my God. How am I just learning about this now? For instance, one of the things that really bogged down and just took hours out of my day and week when I was in my previous roles was creating slides. Slides and spreadsheets. I'm sure neither of you guys have ever had to deal with those, right? My day would just get derailed. I'd get an email, hey, Chris, we're chasing this particular opportunity. We need slides about your practice. And I would have to sort of take 10 slides and crunch them down to 3, or take 3 slides and expand them out to 10 or 11, or take a deck that had been tailored for one vertical, let's say retail, and morph it over to financial services. And they would just take, it just would, just derail my day. And it wasn't something, it's a necessary evil, but at the same time, wasn't one of the things that I was trying to strategically do to drive impact for the firm or for my practice. So when I first learned how to use ChatGPT to help me accelerate the production and the creation of slides and slide content, it was a revelation. Right, it literally shaved about at least an hour off of my day, and I figured out how to hack ChatGPT to give me a link to downloadable slides, which then really took my productivity up here. So it got to the point where, I mean, honestly, it felt like I was cheating. I would schedule send slides to my colleagues so they wouldn't know how quickly I could turn them around.
In other words, you would be done, but you would delay it for a while, so they thought you were working your butt off. Yeah,
that's right. I'd be done in about 30 minutes, and I'd probably make it like, oh, it took me 3 hours to do this. And I started to learn how to train the AI and AI chats and everything for more comm-specific tasks. So say, for instance, for thought leadership, I, created the logic within, back then, a chat, and then eventually custom GPT. Because the dreaded thing that we all of us have had to deal with is an executive who says, you haven't learned my voice, after they have blown off every single meeting with you, not giving you any kind of feedback, haven't given you anything to go off of, right? Yeah. And so I was able to sort of cobble whatever I could together, upload it into ChatGPT, and just ask it to break down the attributes of that particular person's speaking or writing style. And then I would just basically train it, say, hey, use this for any time I give you an assignment. And then it gave me much better, more predictable outputs. And then I could tweak it, because there's how an executive sounds and how they want to sound. So it's like, okay, we'll use this. And in one particular executive, I said to give it a little twist and insert some bits and pieces from other people. And then that we kind of nailed it, and we kind of arrived at that. So really being able to kind of like take the AI, effectively prompt it, and train it for specific use cases like slide production for new business pitches, like training it for thought leadership content, really kind of helped me plus up my productivity. So then once I started to do my own thing and train other clients on how to do that, really what I started to do was incorporate other tactics and other things that were just sort of common needs.
That's awesome. What like LLMs do you most rely on?
Yeah, so this is one that really makes it fun when I talk to my accountants, because I have so many subscriptions. I subscribe to Claude, I use ChatGPT, I use Gemini, I use Perplexity. And probably like most of us, I find that there's no one killer app. Each of them has their strengths and minuses. They have different things that are unique about them that make them really good. I really like the deep research agent from ChatGPT and OpenAI. I really like the creative output from Claude, although I think ChatGPT is catching up with it. So there are different things that I like and kind of keep me every month saying, I still need to subscribe to this. So I don't think there's any one in particular that's head and shoulders above the other, depending on what it is you're looking for. And that's typically what I tell clients when they're trying to figure out what should be in their stack.
So my agency is spending a lot of time, Chris, trying to figure out how to best position our clients to be delivered in the answers on these LLMs, right? because PR is having a bit of a moment now where, you know, everybody was writing us off saying, oh, who needs PR? AI can do all that. Well, it turns out earned media and third-party validation is more important than it ever has been. And things like press releases have relevance again, as long as you frame the press releases in the form of answers to an extent, make it more palatable.
But I heard that PR doesn't help drive revenue, Perry. No. That's what I heard.
No, you feel it in your gut.
So that was sarcasm for anybody who didn't pick up on it. Anyway, carry on.
Folks, that's a joke. So Chris, I guess my question is, to what extent are you kind of deep in the world of helping either your clients or yourself figure out best practices relative to being found in those LLMs at the point of need? And what can you kind of say about the state of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a big area because as you guys know, what comes up in these searches is really important. And there was a stat I saw from Gartner that said that, well, first of all, let me just paint the picture. In my previous roles, I would go in and I would talk to clients and tell them that the first page of Google results, that is your corporate homepage. You can have all the fancy branding and copywriting all you want, but people are going to search your company. They're going to search your executives' names, et cetera. And then whatever pops up in that first 10 results on the first page of Google is going to heavily influence what they believe about your brand. And the last stats I saw, something around in the neighborhood of 93 or 94% of audiences believe what they find in Google search results, right? Okay, so that was sort of then. That was the lay of the land that we've been operating under probably for the last 20 years or so. Now, as we all know, a lot of us are starting to put those same types of queries into AI, directly into LLMs, and get the results out. They don't give you 10 results, they give you one answer, right? And even with Google, a lot of times our searches end with the AI answer, the AI mode answer at the very top, and then you'll see the 10 results at the bottom. And I've seen anywhere from around up to 40% of the time, people will look at the answer that's provided in AI mode and not even look at the rest of the results at the bottom. So it's really becoming an important driver in terms of driving reputation. And then on top of that, I started to mention the Gartner research. Gartner predicts that by 2026, search volume will have declined by about 25%. Okay, so that's massive, because now we're going to see a much, much larger number of people relying on that single answer. So that really raises the bar, Perry, for what you mentioned. It's got to be right. We've got to make sure that we get how our brand needs to be represented well into these LLMs. And that's a challenge because they all kind of work a little bit differently, and they all are trained on different information and news sources, right? For instance, you may get a great hit about your company in the New York Times. Well, guess what? They're currently in litigation with LLMs like ChatGPT, and so they're not allowing those tools to scrape their content. It's important, right? So what shows up in these LLMs in some part will be influenced by who's allowing that information to be ingested.
And you know what's an interesting thing that I think is, I used to never recommend that people like just apply for lists or awards or whatever, because just to do it, like that's just a checkbox. There's no outcome. Like, what does that get you? Now I'm like, do it. If you can get on a list, because if somebody's asking what's the best, blah, 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 it is going to pull from some random list. Even if that list is bullshit, it's going to show up. So like, it may not be important to you for X, Y, or Z outcome or selling more, whatever. But if it's the thing that's going to show up in the LLM, that is a massive value. So like, maybe we can't like just thumb our nose at these lower quality listicles anymore that, I don't know. I used to often just tell people, let's not spend our time on that kind of crap. And let's try to actually focus on getting our message out. But now sometimes it's like, maybe you do just want to be mentioned alongside other things.
I feel like anywhere you can pollinate your brand's message, you pollinate. Like that's the
in
new
organic sources. Yes.
Organic, right. Correct.
Yes. That's, I agree. Right. And it's such a different thing than PR used to, well, than strategic PR people used to, like it used to be very like, let's take a targeted approach. We're doing X to achieve Y outcome. Now it's kind of like, spray and pray is back, baby. Let's get it all over the place. Yeah.
We have We have prospects calling us specifically now. I mean, like directly for this, for the expressed reason of getting cited in LLMs when people are searching. Like I would say probably 20 to 30% of the inbound we get is they lead with that. Like we understand search is waning. We understand the ascent of LLMs. How do we best position ourselves now to get ahead of the competition? Full stop. And so that's how we're beginning our conversation.
Like a spray and pray offering. That's like, it's not even quality media we're going for. We're just going for hits.
Would you like the fire hose special? Because that's for sale today.
Gatling gun, right? Listen, it's the wild, wild west. So it's not a bad analogy. You know, and I think you kind of touched on it. The old is new again. Blogs are now, you know, in vogue because
newsletters,
right?
Yeah.
Even Reddit. I mean, OpenAI did a big deal with Reddit, and it's that content. Those conversations are helping train the model, and so you know we might start seeing AMAs back in vogue, right?
They are back in vogue. So, I've been invited to do Reddit AMAs lately, and I'm like, what? Written AMAs? Cool.
I did an AMA on Reddit. I was asked to do it for the public relations, you know, channel, basically. And I did that about a year and a half ago. But the Reddit thing is so interesting to me because anybody who spent any time there knows that their bullshit detectors are like all over the place. Like you can't go there as a marketer and like talk about how awesome you are and expect not to get skewered.
Adding value. Yeah.
Oh, or yeah, shit exactly. So, but everybody now knows that Reddit is instrumental in delivering those answers. And so everybody's trying to infiltrate Reddit. And boy, oh boy, is a war shaping up between people preserving the integrity of Reddit and the marketers who want to infiltrate it. And it's just a really interesting time.
It is interesting. Super interesting.
It really is. You know, and I would also say, you know, so it's interesting, I think, to pay attention to those media deals. You know, for instance, another one with OpenAI who's been very aggressive, they've done a media deal with Axios. And I think the centerpiece of that deal is going to be doing, starting at least with local content in four markets, four trial markets to start. So, you know, I think that that's really important is to research and figure out where those LLMs are getting their news, where they have those deals, and bake that into your media strategy.
Can I ask a question about how you see young talent in the comm space and PR space right now? Because I know that there's been some studies that show there's something like, I don't know, the first 2 or 3 years, typically when students are out of college, those jobs that they would have are kind of being erased by AI across various industries. I'm hearing that all the time. But when I look at what's actually happening at my agency and what you've described as the things you've been using AI for, those don't really sound like super junior tasks. And in fact, the slide presentation stuff, the, you know, all the things you mentioned seem more like at least middle management to senior management type tasks. So are you fearful or optimistic about the young folks considering getting into comms or getting into PR against the backdrop of what you've seen and done in the AI space?
Well, I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake. I know that there are agencies who have said that they plan that part of how they're planning their roadmap with AI is to reduce their reliance on junior staff. And I think that's a mistake. And I'll just be completely honest. I never thought that we in the comms industry knew how to deploy junior staff in the first place. You know, I never thought it never made sense to me, guys, that, you know, we'd have these armies of young people that you recruit out of the best, you know, colleges and universities in the country. And you say, great, get up at 5 a.m. and start with media clips and all this kind of stuff. I just thought that there's a better way to analyze media than that. I didn't come up in PR. I came up in marketing and advertising, and I learned how to analyze media coverage without having to go through that process. So I know it's possible. And then, you know, you guys have been around this business for a long time. We've also gotten into bad habit of making them pseudo assistants and having them take notes during calls and things like that. You don't even get to speak until you've gotten a couple of stripes on your shoulder. So I don't think we ever really knew how to deploy our young talent in the first place. It's a whole separate conversation about us not knowing how to deploy senior talent either. But I think give them meatier things to do. Yes, take some of those rote tasks off their plate. Use AI to accelerate and the process of media coverage. But how about have them start doing analysis, right? It's never too early to train their brains to be able to be good media analysts, right? What are you seeing? What are the threads? What are the through lines? What do you think is the implication? That's what clients want. They know they could get the clips themselves, right?
Well, they want to know what to do with them. Now AI makes it so like you don't have to do any clipping. You don't like you just have the data. What are you going to do with the data, right? And I think now you could come straight out of college and start using LLMs and be the one who is analyzing data, because we are trained how to do that in college. We are trained how to like look at information and come up with conclusions based on that information. So to your point, it's not like you just have to do bitch work in order to learn how to do PR. It's like apply what you already know to the tools that we have available to us now and then learn as you go for all of the other stuff, for sure.
Absolutely.
I actually think like, unless we start looking like creating new kind of opportunities for this just out of school generation, it's going to be really weird for a few years, because we're just like expecting people to like go into the same roles that existed before, even though those roles are going away. But there is still a need for people to utilize said new tools, right? And manage those. And that shouldn't necessarily fall on the CMO or the director of comms or whatever, because their time might be better spent elsewhere. Why are we not saying, hey, this is a perfect role for the 21-year-old straight out of college? I don't know, but this is a great point.
Absolutely. You know, and I think also that we need more talent. I mean, the industry is going through and is just at the very beginnings of a massive transformation. None of us knows what it's going to look like on the other side. We're going to need all the brain power we can throw at this. So it's almost like the Lakers saying, hey, we're not going to take the best prospects out of college anymore. We're just going to use veterans, right? It just doesn't make any sense. These are your future leaders and your future stars. So
they're digital native. I think that there's something like, there is something to understanding how to brand people, companies, whatever. You have to understand like generational nuance, and like 40-year-olds and 20-year-olds are from two different planets in a lot of ways right now, you know? And so you need to have 40-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 58-year-olds all working under the same roof in order to be able to like hit the cultural nuance and understand the things that matter to people these days, because everyone's attention is so fragmented. It's just not as easy as it was before to be like, here's a swath of people that I'm trying to target, because that swath that you're trying to target now exists in 1,000 different places that they used to before.
Well, you know what's interesting, Becca, about that? So the digital native piece, I totally agree with. And they would be best equipped, you would think, to embrace this new technology and quickly, you know, grok how to install it in everything they do. Grok, no pun intended. but there's kind of an existential battle, isn't there, between colleges who are sort of anti-AI in a sense, wanting kids to prove out and use their own thinking and not relying too heavily upon AI to get their education and get their answers. And yet the real world is demanding they do just that. Like the real world is screaming and crying for talent coming out of college who already has a baseline understanding of all these tools. So I don't know how you rectify that without having a broader, you know, sort of educational campaign saying these colleges need to embrace AI, lean the hell into it, and educate the living shit out of kids that are about to enter the workforce, because otherwise there's going to be a 2 or 3 year delta between when they get out of school and when they get hired.
The same though for like .com time, like everybody saying like these kids are leaving college and they have no idea how to, like, the reason why everyone was dropping out of college, because college wasn't teaching them how to do the stuff in order to create the next big company using code or go work at a startup, but being a coder, because colleges weren't doing it. Colleges are 10 years behind. And like, I'm all about higher education, don't get me wrong.
Same.
But it is a miss when AI is clearly the revolutionary technology right now, and colleges are just spending all of their time trying to figure out how to moderate it, which yes, they do have to do that, but they also have to figure out how to teach it from an ethics perspective, from a like use, just practical use perspective. It's like being 1997 and like saying you guys cannot use Google for your assignments.
You no internet for you.
Library and only do that there. And it's like, No, you colleges need to go find some AI experts to come and teach some courses so that you guys can get up to speed with the times.
You kids can use encyclopedias and microfiche, and that's it.
That's it.
Oh my goodness. Boy, you got a whole bunch of Gen Zers like, what is Googling microfiche? You're 100% right. I don't know how you justify charging what could be, you know, $250,000 for a four-year education and have that kid graduate knowing nothing about AI in 2025. It's almost criminal. But I think that we've seen, just as you guys have mentioned, we've seen these patterns repeat themselves where the universities are way behind and it takes them time to catch up. It happened with myself. I mean, like I said, you know, I was a graphic design major. I went to art school. I'm a little bit older than I look. And so, you know, when I graduated, it was right at the beginning of the desktop publishing revolution. Problem, I learned how to do all the graphic design stuff in college with the old school T-square and triangle and flexible curve and all that stuff they don't use today. And when I graduated, effectively, my degree was obsolete. My first job interview, they asked, do you know how to use a computer? And I lied. And I said, yeah, I do. You know, and I figured, well, I know more than they do. I figured it out and I taught myself. So I think that we're almost kind of in a similar inflection point, but back then they wouldn't let us use computers in you know, our program in college, just like they're not letting people use AI today. Now, eventually they came around and eventually they'll come around in the universities today. But you're right. I think that we have to think about new ways to challenge students. If they can use ChatGPT or Claude to create a paper, great. How about have them do a mock debate, right? How about take them and say, all right, well, the paper that you created, go over there and take your colleague who knows nothing about this topic and teach them about it, right? Show how much they understand. Or how about this? Show me your prompts, right? Let me see how creative and how intricate your prompts were to generate this paper, and I'll grade you on that. I think that there's so much we could be doing rather than wringing our hands that they're using it to cheat. They've always been cheating, right? If you want to cheat, you could have always done it.
The teachers need to evolve too. It is really, it's like, it's both things because there's new tools. Like, okay, people used to use a hammer and now we have a plug-in that you can use to break up the concrete. You know, they shouldn't have to just keep using the hammer because the teacher only knows how to use the hammer. And I just like, it boggles the mind. I think what you said before, and this is always my number one piece of advice I give to anybody who asks, like, what advice would you give me? It's the be the I'll figure it out person, because especially during these times of transition, nobody knows what the hell they're doing. We are all just trying to figure it out. And if you have the drive to figure it out and raise your hand and be like, I don't really know how to do that, but I'm sure I can figure it out. Go figure it out. And that's how you learn how to do it better, right? You learned AI by playing with AI. You didn't go to a class and say, hey, teach me how to do this so that I can go teach other people. You literally started just like consuming information and tinkering with it and talking to people and blah, blah, blah. And like, that is really where we're at right now with AI. And like, the more you can just trial and error and figure things out, you will be light years ahead of your peers, even if you don't have anybody come and train you how to do it. Just start watching YouTube videos or reaching out to people who do know how to do things and like tinker, 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 because that is really the thing that's going to, I think, win the day right now and make you way more marketable in your next job.
And you can even ask AI to teach you how to use it.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
That's where we're at. And just, can I just pivot a little bit? So, all the organizations I see, the CEOs are talking about, like, we need to reduce headcount because, like, it's almost like a badge of honor to have a reduced headcount right now. Like, they are super psyched to report to their shareholders, like, we've reduced headcount, our profits are up. But yet, against that backdrop, I'm hearing about a lot of leaders hiring back people of the roles they eliminated. To your earliest point, Chris, about you think it's a mistake letting go of the youngest folks. Where do you see it shaken out in corporate America writ large as it relates to CEOs being compensated for reducing headcount and, you know, being glorified leaders because they've become so efficient, and the reality on the ground that you need human beings to actually interact with these tools to bring out the best of what it's got? Like, how do you see this playing out in the next 5 years?
Well, I think that there have been, I think somewhere I've read that somewhere in the neighborhood of like $2 trillion worth of money invested in AI over the past couple of years or so. So I think a lot of investors, first of all, I think there's been a lot of overpromising and out sort of outlandish expectations about what those efficiency gains would look like and how quickly they would happen. And in a lot of cases, the investors are saying, look, you spent all this money. We need to start seeing some cost savings and we need to start seeing some returns. So I think that there are going to be a number of executives, CEOs, who are going to feel pressured to cut costs. So I think we're going to keep seeing that, because in some cases, they're going to have to do it, if for no other reason, just to have a Klarna type moment, like, look, we tried it. That didn't work out very well. Now we got to start bringing people back. Similar type of thing with Duolingo. So yeah. I think we're probably going to see some of that, because I think some of them just feel kind of boxed in. But I think a lot of this is due to a lot of these predictions. And again, we've seen this, we saw it with the dot-com boom as well. You know, when retail's got, or brick and mortar is going to go away, you're never going to go to a store again. Well, how'd that work? So I think that people saying, hey, we're going to have all these capabilities within the next 6 months or 12 months or so, set up unrealistic expectations, and we're kind of paying for that. I think realistically, I always say co-pilot, not autopilot. The ideal pairing is humans and AI working together. And ultimately, whether they have to learn it the hard way or the easy way, I hope they learn it the easy way, I think companies are going to figure that out.
What's so interesting is I hear so very little about companies investing in upskilling their workforce for this. So very little. And I mean, this is what you do for a living. So people are hiring you to come in and upskill their workforce. But like, the conversation is, let's cut people or let's hire people who know how to do AI stuff so that we can do AI stuff here. And there's no conversation about, let's give time to our employees so that they can go tinker with AI, and let's give them X number of hours a day to go learn this, or have somebody come in and teach them or help them build an agent or whatever. It comes down to people really needing to go out and do it themselves. And so if you do want to have a workforce who is going to multiply what they're doing right now by using AI, then freaking teach them how to do it, right? Give them permission to go try and fail and waste time on a project that might lead to nowhere, because that's how they're going to learn how to do it. And you're never going to be able to have an AI workforce that is productive using AI if you don't teach people how to use it. And I don't understand. Like, where is the conversation around upskilling rather than just like...
That reminds me of the old CFO saw, which is, well, what happens if we spend all this money training all these people and they leave?
And then they leave, yeah.
And then somebody's like, well, what if we don't train these people and they fucking stay?
That's right.
that's kind of where we're at.
You're right. You know, it's incredibly short-sighted. It's the first place, unfortunately, in our business culture, which has been this way for the past 40 years. It's the first place we go, right? Cut costs. And costs are us, right? People. But you're 100% right, Becca. The companies that are going to endure, like, you know, if we could transport 10 years into the future, the strongest, best performing companies are going to be companies that have more people who understand how to use AI, not fewer people using AI.
Totally.
So I think that upskilling really needs that. We've got to think about that again. And it wasn't that long ago that training, corporate training, et cetera, was the norm in corporate America. But I think, you know, I don't know, my theory is somewhere around the Great Recession, you know, 2008, 2009, a lot of those budgets got cut and they just never came back. But I think we're going to really dust that off, because, you know, you're going to have a lot of training. You can come in and you can hire someone like me, please do. But I think you can't just take one bite at the apple. It's a continuous thing. No one can take one golf lesson and think that they know how to play golf, or one French lesson and think they know how to speak French fluently. You've got to keep doing it. You've got to keep training. And I think companies are going to have to continue to invest in training, even for people who know how to use AI, because it's a moving target.
Totally. I mean, I felt like a year ago I was on top of it, and now I just always feel like I'm behind, because like, it really is a matter of like, how many hours in the week do you have to spend on learning the new things or understanding the new models or whatever, because there is constantly something new, constantly a new way to add value, but like, it takes time, right? You have to go devote time to learning it, tinkering with it, refining it. Like, it's not just a snappy, easy, you know.
I think the permission piece organizationally, like internally, like if our ethos is like, we are going to get smart, we're going to do what it takes to learn as best we can as these things morph and change. I think that's the winning strategy. Like I'm trying to incorporate that with Crackle. So we have like a dedicated channel on Slack that is all about like AI learnings, use cases, where everybody is just constantly got this little laboratory of things they're trying, and they tried to upload this file into that, and this is the format, like just constantly sharing what we're learning, iterating and tweaking. But it's gotta be blessed at the highest levels of the organization to let people experiment, to Becca's point, and have that time and space and grace and latitude to learn as they fly, you know? And I think most companies don't have the patience or the time unless there's a measurable outcome or output, sound familiar, PR and comms, associated with that. So I think 100%. That's another problem we have to solve. And like, how do you give soft time to people that you can't directly measure the outcome? How do you do that organizationally and have the key stakeholders bless that?
We're in that transition right now. And on the note of transition, I'm going to transition us to our ending questions because they're my favorite part of the show because they show everybody's personality. Although we will not be asking our old question of, would you rather have the hiccups for 3 months or cut your finger off? Because we've asked that 10 times now.
And it's good every time. Wait, what is your answer to that one quickly? Would you rather have hiccups for 3 months or cut off your pinky?
Oh man. I mean, I'd have to go with the hiccups. I rely way too much on my pinkies. I'm attached to them.
Jesus Christ.
There it is. Okay. So first we'll go with the normal ones. And then I'm going to let Perry go with an unhinged question for you. And I don't even know what Perry's unhinged questions are, but I also have some unhinged questions if you want to do. Okay.
One.
You get to erase one corporate buzzword from existence. What is it?
Low hanging fruit.
Yes. Love it. Agreed. You're about to give a presentation in front of 50,000 screaming fans. What is your walkout song or walk-up song?
My walk-up song? I would say Public Announcement by Jay-Z. Allow me to reintroduce myself.
I like that.
That's a good one for sure. Okay, if you had to do a TED Talk on anything but AI, communications, all marketing, what would your topic be?
I would say the need for better leadership in corporate America.
Ooh, I would watch that and agree, probably wholeheartedly. And you get to use one emoji only for the rest of your life. Which emoji?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I like my emojis. It would have to be the sort of flexing arm emoji. I use that a lot.
Yeah, that means that things
much
are
to
good.
My friend's chagrin. Yeah, most of my friend's chagrin.
Love it. Solid. Perry, do you have an unhinged question for Chris?
Well, it's not quite as unhinged as cutting off one's pinky or being eaten by a shark, but
okay.
You have a choice, Chris. You can be given $20 million free and easy today to use as you see fit for the remainder of your days. The problem with that is you can never sleep in the same dwelling two nights in a row for the rest of your life. And it can't be two houses you buy next door. You just go next door. It's got to be vastly different locations. Do you take the money and say, screw it, I'll just fly all over the world and sleep wherever the hell I want? Or is routine, structure, normalcy more important than that $20 million cash infusion that would undeniably change your life for the remainder of your days?
Man, everybody's
going to say,
that's a hard one because I love my bed. Everybody's going to say, this guy's insane. He's going to say no to $20 million, but no, I am a creature of habit and structure, and I would much, much rather have my routine and my friends my bed and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you, Chris.
I this is the first time we've ever all agreed on something. I 100% would also not take the money. What am I going to do?
Strong arm emoji.
I have a wife and kids. What am I going to do? Like, see you in a couple days.
I just value my sleep too much. Like I would hate the idea of like waking up one day and being like so tired and being just wanting to get in my bed later that night and being like, where the am I sleeping tonight? I don't even know. I got to get there. This sucks.
I bet if we ask this question a few more times to some guests, some people will be like, you know what? I'm taking the goddamn money.
Careful what you ask for.
Chris, I want to give you an opportunity to share anything with our audience that you would like to share, how they can find you, any parting words, whatever you want to leave us with.
Yeah, parting words. I just want to echo what you said. I mean, you know, I tell people all the time when they say they're not an expert, they don't know anything about this stuff. I say, well, play around with it a bit and wait 6 months, right? So this is evolving. We're on the ground floor of this amazing technology. Please jump in. We need all the brains we can get. So that's the first thing. Where they can find me, you know, not as much as you guys, but I try to maintain a presence on LinkedIn. So you can find me there. And also my website, chrisg.me, where I blog semi-regularly and have a newsletter where I do a prompt of the week every Saturday.
Ooh, that's a good one. I didn't know that.
There you go. Sign up. Well, this has been very enlightening, very fun. And I love this topic. So Chris, I will continue to be in touch with you and hope to learn more from you in the future. And everyone go visit Chris G's website and connect with him on LinkedIn. And we'll see you all next time. Thank you.
Appreciate the discussion. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for having me.